you. Thank you, Joe, Steve, and Tony, and thank you to those of you who posted questions. I'm going to start off with the questions that were typed in, and then once we get through those, we'll open the phone line for questions. Feel free to continue typing in questions as we go, though. So the first question is, what proportion of industry uses VIX, and what does it cost to subscribe? Which I think you just covered that.
Well, if the question, this is Tony Galley, by the way, if the question was specific to Empty Miles, the VIX Empty Miles service, that is, our subscription fees, which are listed here as VIX member fee, is $1,600 and $1,850 for non-VIX members. That's to join the service. We'd love to have you think about becoming members of the VIX Association as well. And with that, you'll get the opportunity to work in and among our committee efforts, which help to drive many other efficiencies in the industry.
Okay. Let's see, next question is a similar concept used for shipping containers?
Yeah, but I can take that question, and I think that the answer is a similar concept can be used for shipping containers. I'm not exactly sure of the context, but sometimes what we have are domestic containers that move intermodally, so they tend to stay landlocked, and initial intent of this system wasn't necessarily to be used for containers that go on the train, but there's no reason why somewhere in the future that capability couldn't be leveraged for that. There's nothing that would preclude that. However, if some players out in the marketplace take the containers and actually run them behind trucks, and in that particular configuration, there wouldn't be any reason why folks couldn't use that. So if it's tied, if the question is tied to domestic containers, that's how I would see the empty mile service playing.
Okay. The next question is, can you clarify in what fashion SmartWay endorses VIX? SmartWay certainly endorses reducing empty miles, and SmartWay verifies certain technologies but doesn't endorse particular products and services. And are you a SmartWay affiliate partner?
I can take that. This is Tony. We're affiliated with the SmartWay transport component of SmartWay Transportation Alternatives. And what we actually, I think, said on the slide was that VIX is a proud supporter of SmartWay. They have taken a look at our program and think that it offers a very foundational and yet unique opportunity for companies to save both dollars and more significantly save or reduce the impact on the environment.
Let me just chime in here. If you're interested, whoever asked the question, I suggest you want to get in touch with Buddy Polovic. Buddy Polovic is with SmartWay. I spoke at a conference in Dallas a couple of years ago, and Buddy Polovic and the SmartWay team were there, and I talked about VIX Empty Miles as well as a couple other initiatives. There was immediate interest in the opportunity that was being presented by Empty Miles, and so we've been working with Buddy Polovic and the SmartWay team now since that time. So I'd really invite you to give Buddy a call. I know he'd be happy to talk to you and to explain to you why they see this as an opportunity and why they see their support of VIX Empty Miles as being important to their membership.
Okay. Can the dray portion of intermodal be addressed?
Yeah, I can take that one. Steve, again, the nature, I want to just articulate that the nature of the solution was originally intended to be around private fleet optimization, captive capacity within a shipper, or a carrier's dedicated type of operation, which is when they put their trucks against a specific set of freight on behalf of a customer. And the reason we did that is because we wanted to make sure that the capacity was actually there in those markets on a regular basis. In other words, when you look at how freight
else in this marketplace, the U.S.-based marketplace. It can have a random, you know, the service providers tend to have a random network configuration where their trucks aren't always in the same markets every single day doing the same thing. So I share that with you because Dray is a very interesting component in that it's not thought of as being dedicated capacity, but it typically spends all its time going from ramp to customer, maybe another customer, back to ramp. So there would be no reason why the opportunity to try to find backhaul freight in that configuration wouldn't be something that could be advantageous. Of course, in the model of empty miles, what it would mean is that you would find a shipper who would have a return load that would take you from somewhere close to your original consignee back to your ramp. And to the degree that you can do that and find those within empty miles, that would be a very, very successful win-win type of situation.
Okay. Next question is, based on the Schneider experience, has this program found success in traditional backhaul lanes?
Yeah, I mean, it absolutely has. I'm not exactly sure if I understand traditional backhaul lanes, but if I just share a little bit more of the story from Schneider's perspective, I'm a carrier, I'm like a lot of carriers, so I'm almost responding less about Schneider and more about just carriers in general. We do some random business. We also have dedicated capacity. In the solution with Macy's, it was another customer's dedicated capacity that had the empty lane that Macy's had a set of loads that were perfect for. And I think what's helpful about understanding this for some is that if I run that lane empty 5 days a week, Macy's had loads on three of those days. That didn't make it a perfect fit, but it was a lot better than what I was doing, and it was for someone that wasn't in the apparel business. They're a different vertical market in the industry, but we were able to layer that in there, meet Macy's service needs, continue to meet my customer, the original customer's dedicated needs, and be able to drive out costs. So from my definition of what a traditional lane would be, I would call that a traditional backhaul, and yeah, very much so. It's been able to help us in that area.
Steve, would you just take a minute and explain how a three-way benefit occurs for the people that are involved in that particular situation?
Yeah, well, when you say three-way benefit, make sure I answer it correctly, Joe. Just give me a little bit
more. I'm saying, well, what would be the benefit to Schneider or to Macy's and that other third party?
Well, what happens is the other third party might be, and I'll give you examples. There are just a lot of different ways to do this, but the other third party might be on some type of revenue share on the empty leg. So, you know, they may sign a deal with you that would say, if you're able to fill that lane, then we get 30% of it, you get 70% of it. And so in that case, you would have the original shipper, who's in essence paying for the entire dedicated route, has something in there that says, if we can fill that, we'll give him a kicker, but he gets to reduce his cost. I get a kicker because I'm covering some of my additional costs, and Macy's gets the benefit of the fact that this empty lane can allow you to maybe possibly price more effectively in the marketplace, and then they get a reduced cost for moving their freight on some capacity that's already on the lane. So that would be an example where three people win by solving one empty lane issue.
That's what this is Joe. In my view, that's how unique this opportunity is that with creative opportunities and creative minds, you got a three-way win, which is really difficult to achieve in today's business world. But once you put it in place, it's something that, and Steve, I'd ask you to comment on this. Once it's put in place, you don't really see the type of operational problems that you might expect. I mean, say for a bad winter storm or something of the kind. But in terms of the loading windows or unloading windows or the amount of labor and such that goes into it, Steve, just comment on that a little bit, what you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, Joe used the word magic early on around the magic of the system. To me, the magic comes where the operational aspects of this are upfront dealt with and committed to by the parties who want to engage in this, because if the value that can be derived is significant enough so that folks go, here's what I'm going to do to make this loading window work. So for those of you who I might, you know, who may not be as close to some of this, if you have a truck that's coming into a market and it's available at 11, but the shipper's saying my freight's going to be available at 2, theoretically my driver's got to sit for 3 hours before I can move him. That's wasted time, wasted productivity, and he's on the clock, and he may not have enough hours to run that load. So that load might traditionally look like I cannot solve the problem. However, if the shipper is willing to move the window up to 11 o'clock because they can adjust something, then they get the benefit of loading my driver, you know, right on top of his hours. We can move him without sitting him. All of a sudden, I can create a better solution, a more cost-effective solution for that particular configuration, and that's when everybody wins. It's when you commit, and the idea behind this thing, I used the word durable before, the idea behind this thing is that everyone's committing to make that happen and make their end of the transaction work so that you don't have any breakdowns, and when people make that commitment, then this thing can kind of really work in an executed fashion as a value in the marketplace.
I think, again, going back to magic, part of the magic here is that the opportunities to save money are substantial. And it encourages companies to take the steps to get that truck loaded to make sure that they don't create a situation where it's not advantageous for the transportation company, for example. And being involved in another industry in the past where we attempted many times to make backhaul work, it never really did what it should have done, because there were always issues around operating guidelines, around the transportation that was allowance that was being made and what have you, so that in effect it never really did do what it should have been able to do. This is a totally different and unique opportunity for companies that don't necessarily have to operate within the same vertical to be able to take advantage of transportation savings.
Okay, and what obstacles did you run into in implementing the program?
I guess that one is directed at me. What's interesting about this is I would tell you that probably the most significant obstacles were, first, historical perspective was probably the number one obstacle, in that a lot what we ran into often was people involved in the transaction or involved in trying to solve the problem going, we tried to do this before, it always sounds good, but it never works. They don't stay committed to solving the problem. So because this is not a problem that just popped up in recent times, because it's been around for folks who've been in transportation, it's probably been around since the day they started, you get a lot of folks that go, yeah, been there, done that, tried to solve this, there's nothing magical about this, and then they try to equate it to something else that they would typically know. So they would go, well, that's just the same thing that, and then pick somebody, XYZ did, or somebody else did, or we tried to do this 10 years ago, or this is how. So the obstacle was more about getting people through maybe what I would call the emotional side of believing that this can solve the problem. Once we got through that, the obstacles that you might expect to run into, like technical issues or contractual issues or operational issues, from our experience, especially as it relates to the Macy's, those were less significant in just getting it moving. And that's what I was alluding to, and I probably didn't do a very good job, but that's what I was alluding to when I talked about leaders needing to take some of the obstacles out of the way, because it was more those types of issues early on that we were kind of wrestling with than some of the things that you might think of.
If I could just hitchhike on there just for a little bit. Anyways, this initiative has a lot to do with two broad areas. One is change management and the other is collaboration. What we've seen in practically every new initiative that's been brought up and suggested by the BICS organization is the resistance to change. That companies really need to understand that change is probably one of the most prevalent barriers that they've got to manage. And therefore, what we're now introducing is another way to manage transportation. So in many cases, we will find that companies that are ensconced in a particular way of managing transportation will begin to resist it. The other idea is about collaboration, and that is there aren't any companies today that are going to be successful ultimately if they're operating in a silo. And that silo, it can be looked at in a number of different ways. In this Empty Miles initiative, it really is bringing together two or more entities that would work together in a collaborative way that would all enjoy the substantial benefits. So that's what we have to make sure that companies understand, that this isn't just about the technology. You drop it in and it does everything that you're going to expect it to do. You've got to be able to drop in, understand that you're going to have to change the way you're doing business. And as one of our subscribers has made it very clear to us, and that is, it's a lot about sweat equity. That the information be there, it may be there, but you've got to reach out to the opportunity that exists to flesh it out, to ferret it out, and then to be able to move forward to make it happen. But it depends what kind of organization that companies have that they're managing. Is it one that's amenable to change, or is it a company that's ensconced again in a particular way of doing business, and it's really hard to make a different, take a different approach?
Yeah, this is Tony. I'll just mention the point that comes to mind for me most prominently was those subscribers that signed on and said, well, boy, I put in a couple of lanes and the phone never rang. One of our subscribers from JCPenney said it best when he said it requires sweat equity. It really requires working the system, digging deeper than just what you might see on the surface, like Steve talked about earlier. You look at an opportunity, oh boy, this is off by 2 hours, it can't work. Well, you know what, if you just look at it that way, I guess it can't. But Steve also talked about making some compromises and concessions along the way that ultimately resulted in the lane working. Empty Miles is a low-cost investment, but it does require commitment. And those companies that have put in that sweat equity have been the ones who have realized the benefit from it.
Okay. Is there a similar concept for shipping ocean containers internationally? And if not, are there any plans to do this in the future?
I think you just asked that question earlier.
Did I go over?
We were dealing with the container thing. Maybe just to close on that, I think what you're talking about here is the international. So this is the container that originates in Hong Kong or Shanghai and is destined for Chicago. I would say that the, and Joel, you can take over here, but I would say that the design of the system isn't necessarily intended to address that issue. I would also tell you that the kind of one of the things that's somewhat in the background here is that the system is looking for, it's trying to balance demand and capacity, so your trucks and the freight that moves. The international freight problem is still a pretty significantly imbalanced high, well, it's an export, depending on where you are, but the export or the imports into the U.S. are far superior to the exports from the U.S., and so there's an awful lot of containers, hence probably the reason for the question, I guess, but there's a lot of containers that go empty, but if there's no freight to put on them, Empty Miles isn't going to necessarily find it. So there's a concept there that about balance that's fairly critical. Whether or not we would think of being able to do something in that area in the future, I guess, is something that could be looked at, certainly. And Joe, you may have some other thoughts.
Well, the opportunities are often defined by the VIX membership. So as the VIX membership moves down this path, argument's sake, proves the benefits of Empty Miles, and then we begin to look at the opportunities to do a better job with managing ocean freight. We have an affiliate in Beijing, VIX Asia Pacific, that's deeply ensconced with China National Textile and Apparel Council. They've got 10,000 companies that are their members. China realizes that low-cost labor is no longer a competitive advantage, and so they are very interested in working with us and with the BICS organization to do a much better job of managing supply chain. So that's part of what we're seeing here, is this opportunity to demonstrate that something like Empty Miles works, and then from that we can go into other areas that become apparent to the subject matter experts, which are our BICS membership.
Okay. Next question is, you touched on legal concerns between participants in the program and input received on this subject. Do you provide template agreements based on the input received, or does each partnership still resolve this in their own way?
I'll try this, and Tony, you can jump in, Steve, yourself. That is, I think what we have is a template that companies can refer to, but I certainly wouldn't put myself out to be able to represent the legal entities for each of the companies. They may have a totally different view. But we can give you a start, and then from there you can take it to your own legal department to be able to identify what are the, let's say, the liabilities that they might have. Steve, would you like to comment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the I think it's a great question, and the reason why we put together, one of the reasons why we put together a legal template, a contractual template to help the process, is that in this industry, if you're a carrier and there's a shipper that wants to create a relationship, the idea of contracting for that relationship is very common. So that happens all the time, the shipper with the carrier. And the carrier understands the nuances of what the shipper's looking for and what kind of insurance they want to have and what kind of indemnification and. What we found is that this solution can work for shipper to shipper. So if you're a shipper with a private fleet, you may want to work directly with another shipper and try to solve your empty mile issue shipper to shipper. Well, the shippers weren't necessarily well positioned, could you say, to contract with each other, because they typically have done their contracting with a carrier. So there were some issues that we were running into early on, and so we did that to facilitate that process a little bit more effectively. But I would agree with what Joe said, and that is when it comes right down to it, you do have to be still have to be willing to put a contract in place, because remember, we want this to be durable. You do have to be able to put a contract in place, and that requires people to look at the various terms and conditions on a solution by solution basis to make sure it's right for all parties involved.
And I would say liability is probably at the top of the list.
Liability is another one. Yep.
Tony, do you have anything to add?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. It was always our intention to just provide a starting point, not the actual documents that would carry the parties through the process.
Okay, and next question is, and I guess this question is really for Steve, does Schneider use dedicated for Macy's, and if not, does Macy's benefit if they provide freight for the empty miles?
Yeah, I think I may have touched on that, but I'll just quickly go. Our dedicated solution is not dedicated for Macy's. I was using a different customer's dedicated solution, and Macy's did benefit, because the benefit they get is that their freight moves on what used to be an empty mile leg that I had, and the reason they can get the benefit is because I can potentially provide them a solution at a more effective market rate than maybe they were paying, because I've already got captive capacity running on a lane. And so that's how they benefited, and that was a three-party type of benefit. So,
okay, and which area of the country do you think has benefited most from the program so far, such as less traffic than before?
You know, from our perspective, and I don't know if Joe or Tony can talk to a broader perspective, but from our perspective, it's been somewhat dispersed. So, I mean, I wouldn't say there's been a tremendous geographic concentration. It's quite honestly, it's been more opportunistic. And so, you know, there's been some stuff in the old Rust Belt area. There's been some stuff that's moved in the east. There's been some stuff that's moved in the south. So It's been a little bit, it's probably been a little bit more spread out than just, say, concentrated in a particular area, but the reference to congestion is an absolute potential benefit to the program because of the fact that you're using capacity that's already on the road. You don't have to put another truck out there to move the freight. Just use the one that's already running the miles, and so congestion's a big deal.
I'd say that probably east of the Mississippi is where the concentration of movements have taken place.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree.
Yep, that's good.
So it's rather broad, but that's what we've seen so far based on the number of companies that have subscribed and where we're seeing the activity. Anywhere from Dallas through Ohio up to Chicago and then down to Florida, North Carolina, and of course the Northeast, we're seeing a particular amount of volume.
Okay, well, I think we've covered everything that's been typed in. Joe, Tony, and Steve, are there any questions that might have been sent directly to you that I might have missed?
Not to me.
No, I can't see anything.
Let me just look through, because if it came in as private, would that be...
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, there was one that was around, could you address the concern that this individual has heard that the services only really benefits an organization that has their own fleet was the question. And hopefully what I did by some of the other conversations that maybe got after it, but again, I'll try to summarize. A shipper can benefit whether they have a fleet or not. What they're really looking for is to find ways to get their freight moved through capacity that's already captive on a lane or in a market. So it's almost indifferent to whether or not you have a fleet or not, although this has been launched with the kind of targeted for the private fleet and dedicated type benefits. But where the freight comes from a shipper's perspective, they don't have to have a private fleet in order to get benefits from the service. So hopefully that was made clear over the last few of some of the other questions that got answered.
This is Joe. I think it's immaterial whether you have a private fleet or a contracted fleet. The opportunities to do everything we've talked about accrue to both. If I've contracted for a piece of a lane, particular movement, it might as well be my equipment. Doesn't make any difference. I'm paying for it, and if I can make better utilization out of it, I'm going to benefit. So it's, I think it's pretty broad based.
Yeah, in fact, the vast majority of our subscribers do not have their own fleets. They contract for all of their product movement.
Okay, well, I don't believe we have anything else typed in, so we'll go ahead. We do have a few minutes left. We'll go ahead and see if anybody has any questions over the phone, if the operator could give instructions on how to ask questions on the phone.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1. Please unmute your phone and clearly record your name when prompted. Your name is required to introduce the question. To withdraw your question, press star 2. Again, to ask a question, press star 1. It'll be one moment, please, for the first question.
You have any questions?
Yes, this is Linda Newcomb with JCP Logistics. It's more of a comment, and I know there was a lengthy talk concerning Steve Mathis and Joe on the success that Schneider had with this. I did just want to make a comment that every statement they had stated is true. I am not the one from JCPenney that said it takes sweat equity, but it does. I've begun working with this. I am not the initial person at JCPenney that, you know, was part of the VIX and signed on, but it can be a very successful program We do not have our private fleet. It is a dedicated fleet. For those that are listening, it seems like some of the questions and some of the things that I have experienced, but it does take a lot of work of all three parties involved, but it can be a very successful program for all three parties involved, and I just want to emphasize that. But there is work involved. It's not something that can be done within a week. It may even take a month or so to set up, and I'm experiencing that now, but just wanted to you know, reiterate kind of what Steve and Joe had said, because there was a lot of conversation based on that successful program that Schneider had with Macy's.
Thank you. We appreciate your feedback.
And you're welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. We're just about to release the JCPenney case study, and it just tells a phenomenal story all over again, actually, on top of what we saw with Macy's and Schneider National.
Right. Like I said, I'm not the initial one that was involved. I am getting more involved. In fact, I didn't hear the JCPenney quote until this webinar, so I'm going to go. I've got an idea who said it, but
I'll bet you do.
But this was a very good webinar. I mean, it even helped me, and I'm involved in this.
Thank you. Just be very careful, because Tony's liable to rope you in here.
Oh, okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Do we have any
reminder? You can ask a question by pressing *1.
Do we have any other questions?
I show no further questions at this time.
Okay, well then, we are going to go ahead and close out for today. I want to thank all three presenters, and thank you to everybody who posted questions. The recorded version of today's seminar will be available online within the next few weeks, as well as the presentations and a transcript from today's seminar. As a reminder, if you're an AICP member and will be applying for 1.5 certification maintenance credits for today's seminar, please make sure you are either signed in with your full name, or if you were not, type your name into the chat box. Please also download the evaluation form and email it to me after you've completed it. Likewise, if you're not applying for credit but want to fill out the evaluation form, I encourage you to do so as well. The next seminar will be held on March 17th and will be about clean air at port facilities. This seminar is not yet open for registration, but it will be up by tomorrow. So if you go to the Talking Freight website, I'll bring up the information again. By tomorrow, it should be up there for registration. I also encourage you to join the Freight Planning Listserv if you haven't already done so. And one other thing that I will mention is, starting next month, we are going to be offering the audio over the computer. We've heard from a lot of people that they'd like to hear over the computer instead of over the phone, so we will be offering that. Just stay tuned for more information to come about that. Once you register, you'll receive the information in the login instructions. So with that, we'll close out. Thank you, everybody, and enjoy the rest of your day.